today, we are expected to hear from the former finance minister, Mr. Ken Nanaya Ofori-Atta, because he's scheduled to meet the OXP today. So
right now, the special prosecutor's office released a statement which pretty much said what?
Yeah, so let me just say that talking about Ken Ofori-Atta, now the Ken Ofori-Atta's lawyers have indicated that he can't meet the special prosecutor in person because he has to undergo some medical, checks and, procedures. But let me just share with you the series of events that have happened since the OSP declared Ken Ofori-Atta, wanted. Now, the OSP is investigating Mr. Ofori-Atta. First, under the Petroleum and Minerals Revenue Assurance, they're investigating contractual arrangements between Strategic Mobilization Ghana Limited and the Ghana Revenue Authority. Two, the Electricity Company of Ghana contract termination, and that's the termination of a contract between ECG and Beijing Xiangcheng Technology. Also, the National Cathedral Project. So here, the OSP is investigating procurement procedures and financial transactions related to the National Cathedral. And then the ambulance procurement. So, Ministry of Health contract with Service Ghana Auto Group Limited for purchasing and maintaining 307 ambulances. And GRA Tax P Fund Management, handling and disbursement of funds from the Tax P Fund account of GRA. Now, in January 2025, the OSP officially notified Mr. Ofori-Atta that he was a suspect in five separate cases and asked him to appear in person on the 10th of February 2025. On the 31st of January 2025, his lawyers informed the OSP that he was abroad indefinitely for medical reasons and offered to represent him in his absence. On the 5th of February, the OSP rejected the claim of indefinite absence and demanded a firm return date by 10th February, warning of legal consequences for failure to comply. It also reminded that the legal representatives cannot respond to criminal charges on behalf of clients. Now, on the 10th of February, his lawyer submitted a doctor's note, not addressed to anyone specifically, stating he was undergoing tests and possible surgery with no clear return date. So on the 12th of February, with no cooperation, according to the OSP, they declared Mr. Ofori-Atta a fugitive from justice, acting on an arrest warrant. On the 18th of February, Mr. Ofori-Atta appealed to the OSP to remove his name from the wanted list and for the first time provided a definite return date in May 2025, and the OSP accepted his assurance and subsequently took his name off the list. Now, in March 2025, Mr. Ofori-Atta filed a lawsuit against the OSP and the special prosecutor seeking compensation for what he called unlawful declaration of him as wanted and asked for the removal of related publications from the OSP's social media. And then on the 28th of March, the Human Rights Court had an interim application from Mr. Ofori-Atta asking for the OSP to be barred from declaring him wanted again. Now, we know that that particular case has been adjourned to the 18th of June. Now, according to the OSP, and what we've learned from our sources in the US, Mr. Ofori-Atta is expected to report in person to the OSP headquarters on June 2nd. That's today. Now, the OSP has stated that if he fails to appear, his name will be added again to the list of wanted persons, and he will be declared a fugitive from justice. And in such a case, the OSP will begin the process to request Interpol's red notice against him. Okay. However, the lawyers have actually indicated that, look, Mr. Ofori-Atta cannot make it, and they have written to the OSP of these medical challenges that Mr. Ofori-Atta is going through. And so Mr. Ofori-Atta could engage the OSP virtually. So that's it basically on the Ken Ofori-Atta issue.
Mm. All right. Well, let's learn a bit more about this situation from a member of Mr. Ofori-Atta's legal team. Here's Frank Davis. Mr. Davis, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning to your esteemed listeners and viewers. Thank you.
We appreciate your time with us this morning. So, where is Ken Ofori-Atta?
We have established from day one that Ken Okorieta is attending to his medical challenges in the United States. We made that clear already from the warehouses.
Right. So he's currently in Ghana or out of the country?
He's not in Ghana. He's outside of the jurisdiction. And this is known to the OSP. I believe you are also aware. This is abundant public knowledge.
Right. Now, as we have understood, there was a prior agreement that Mr. Foyata would attend to the special prosecutor's office by today. This plan has changed. What happened?
Yeah, correct. There were a series of engagements between us and the OSP's office, and we came to a firm conclusion that Ken will make himself physically available and present to attend onto the ASP for a scheduled interview to elicit or solicit a caution statement from him in view of the charges that the OSP claims to have preferred against. In light of all of this, I think the OSP has been patently made aware of Ken's medical circumstances.
Okay.
Nonetheless, the medical circumstances have changed, and Ken would thus not be unable to be physically present today for any such interview. Of course, today, if my calendar is right, is the 2nd of June, but Ken cannot be physically present. The change in his health circumstances have been communicated duly and promptly to the Office of the Special Prosecutor. That notwithstanding, his medical records have been made available to the court against the back of the suit that he had sued in court against the OSP in the Human Rights Court, seeking, among other reasons, that the OSP ceases from advertising him as a wanted person on its platforms and to desist from still parading him as a wanted person. That application was argued in court. The ASP was in court. Affidavit was argued. The application was argued. And the judge had adjourned the matter to the 18th of June for a ruling. The ASP office have by themselves on their Twitter platform and account brought this to the public forum that the matter had been adjourned to the 18th of June for a ruling. Of course, one's right to fundamental liberty is closely related to whether the person is well or not. Health rights are recognized by the law. So if the OSP's office has been furnished with material which clearly suggests that Ken is unable to be physically present in Ghana for any such interview, I wonder why. I've seen from yesterday there are a lot of media correspondences on Facebook to people suggesting that the OSP are stressing that he is going to address notice arrest on 10 if 10 does not appear this morning or a few days before him. And I find it quite worrying. The Electronic Transactions Act, which was passed, clearly makes room for a video recorded interview. And in this age of technology, Ken has to us, has confirmed to the OSP that he is prepared to avail himself of that. Video recorded interviews permissible under law. So if he cannot come physical and he made himself available to a VR, I don't see what the counter is.
Mr. Frank Davis, I want some quick clarification here. Has the OSP formally acknowledged your medical reports and your request for virtual interrogation or postponement? And is Mr. Ofoyata going to do that today?
The letter has been transmitted to the office of the OSP. It has been duly acknowledged and received. I don't know what else we can do as lawyers. So far as the letter has reached him, we are of a firm conviction that he is aware. And Ken is prepared to make himself available for the VR.
Your answer suggests that even though you've transmitted a letter to the OSP and it's been acknowledged, you do not know, or the OSP has not communicated to you, if they are going to have a virtual session with Ken. Is that the case?
Well, not at this moment. There has been no communication.
Okay.
Now, in the OSP's office. What we have is what is being paraded.
Communication. Yeah, but I mean, Mr. Davis, at the time that you requested, Ken said he was going to show up in person in May. He had indicated reasons. He said he could make it in May. You have also come back then to say, well, his medical condition may have deteriorated, and so he cannot do it at this time. Wouldn't you agree that if you send a letter to the OSP requesting virtual interrogation, it'd be important for you to hear from the OSP on his acceptance or otherwise?
Yeah, but that is what we are all anticipating. We are lawyers. The OSP is the trained lawyer. We have sent a letter to you. It is up to you to say yes or no. Then we take the next steps. But you don't ambush us. You don't respond to the letter. And you just jump to social media threatening that
they are going to be threatening. Mr. Davis, how do you respond to those who say that this is all an attempt not to be present in person? Because initially the point was, I'll be there in May. Then when it is time, I'll be there, this period, when it's getting to that time, another issue surfaces. How do you respond to those who say this is all an attempt not to be present?
Please. I mean, we are dealing with somebody's medical challenge. He doesn't determine it. If I tell you that I'll come and see you tomorrow, and just on the brink of tonight, I suffer a casualty, would you see me tomorrow? I mean, why should it be so difficult for people to understand that the person involved has a health challenge? This was known long before these charges were prepared against him. Who didn't know that Ken was on board? So if his medical circumstances have changed, he should disregard that and come to Ghana because of what he's supposed to come and do in Ghana can be done otherwise. Why? I mean, in this world we boast so much of technology. If VRI can solve it, why? Is it not the same interview? So why should people be suggesting that Ken is running away? So just, no.
Mr. Davis, I know that it's a difficult time to be a lawyer for somebody who is undergoing medical treatment and having to deal with the court of public opinion. But help us, when was the last time you communicated to the OSP? When did you suggest to the OSP that your client cannot be physically present and you wanted to have a virtual session?
A letter was sent to him on the 27th of May.
So that's just last week?
Yes.
And that letter was acknowledged by the OSP?
The OSP has not acknowledged receipt of the letter, but the letter was sent to his office. It was received by law.
And
he has not written back, if you want me to say it.
Okay. and before you send this letter to the OSP on the 27th of May, what other conversation or correspondence had you had with the OSP prior to that? And did you get a response to that as well?
We didn't have communication. We were in court. We were in court to argue the matter.
So
in the case of the chain for a ruling.
Now the OSP gives us the indication that if Ken doesn't appear today, he'll be put back on the list. And this case is also in court. How do you think today's issues are going to affect whatever is going to happen on the 18th of June in court?
But being a lawyer and with the change which has been brought to his attention and also brought to the attention of the court, and he himself has put it out there that the matter has been against the 18th of June for a reason. How can he do a U-turn and decide that he's going to declare him a wanted person or put him on the red alert list? We should go ahead and do that. And when he does that, we also know what to do. We cross that bridge. I don't understand what the indecent case is all about. And this grandmaster, I mean, putting things out on social media and all that, to take all the impression. I mean,
Mr. David, finally, Davis, from
I
me.
Want to believe,
I just would want to.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Davis, finally, I want to understand something. So you're requesting a virtual interrogation. Which provision in our law allows that kind of interrogation?
I've just told you that the Electronic Transactions Act permits that.
All right.
The Electronic Transactions Act permits that.
Mr. Davis,
it is not something we are doing in the bathroom.
Right, Mr. Davis. As you said earlier, this has become a matter of public interest, and of course, the Special Prosecutor's Office is a public office. What can you tell us about the change in Mr. Furiata's health that you've communicated to the OSP?
I should divulge Mr. Kenzo Furiata's medical condition to you already. I mean, how can I possibly do that? Is it not private?
Okay, but you have divulged it to the Special Prosecutor's Office.
Yeah, of course.
So it's a matter of public record now.
Well, you can source that from the public prosecutor, the Special Prosecutor's Office. I'm not about to be on radio talking about my client.
Okay.
Record. I don't think it's professional.
All right. Is Mr. Furiata in a hospital?
Is it not the same thing you're asking?
No, I'm not asking about what his condition is. I'm asking where he is. Is he in a hospital?
He's in the United States of America undergoing medical treatment.
Okay. Can you tell us whether he's in a hospital or not?
He's in the United States of America, attending onto his doctors.
Okay. We want to thank you very much for your time with us this morning, Mr. Frank Davis.
Thank you too very much.
All right. So that's Frank Davis. He's a member of Kenu Friata's legal team. Okay.
Yeah. So, quickly, the provision that Mr. Davis mentions is actually for civil cases, not for criminal cases. But, he had indicated that he had to leave at this time to do other things. But that provision he mentioned is actually for, civil cases and not criminal cases.
Mantibia Boy, President of the Pediatric Society of Ghana. We also have Dr. Titus Bayo on the line. He's a member of Parliament's Health Committee, and for years he's been a specialist working on all sorts of cases. And we also have Mr. Emmanuel Nkrumah, Head of Cosmetics at the FDA. And I believe Mr. Emmanuel Nkrumah is also a dermatologist. They are joining us on the show. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning. Those in the studio and to the listeners as well.
Let me start with Dr. Hilda Mantibia Boy. You are the president of the Pediatric Society.
In your practice, how widespread is this issue of bleached babies?
So I'll just generalize to the children in particular. Unfortunately, I do not have data for the bleaching of babies, as in like their newborns or who mothers have taken medications to bleach them. But in our practice, so anecdotally, let's say about 2 out of 10 children who come into the consulting room, then it could be more, often show signs that they are being bleached, or parents are using a skin lightening agent or product on their skin.
2 out of 10 children that come to your consulting
room. Yes, in the outpatient setting. And so this is anecdotal. It could be more. And depending on the area or which facility these children are being seen, the numbers could be more. We will need research or data, like specifically collected, to know the exact figures. But from practice, this is what I have seen.
Are we seeing these more in the rural areas or the urban areas?
So it will be good to have actual like research data that has been collected. But again, when we have done outreaches in rural communities, we have seen that there too, children are being bleached, or light skin skin lightening products are being used on their children. But to be able to say on authority, we will need actual data. And it's difficult to compare to say whether it's more there or here without this data.
When you engage the mothers, what reasons do they give you for bleaching their babies?
Typically, in our communities, you have people who are fair skin being preferred in a way. They tend to be on the billboard. They tend to get more opportunities or get favored and look prettier in the eyes of many people. So parents then want their children to also become fair. And often they are bleaching themselves because they prefer their fair skin color. And these are some of the reasons why they bleach their children, often not being aware of the harmful effects that the skin bleaching can cause, especially for the children.
Now, I know that pregnant women come for antenatal, and some when they are done, they come for postnatal sessions as well. Do we include some of this education in engaging expectant mothers and nursing mothers and mothers in general to know the effects of this?
When we have the opportunity to, so there have been a number of educational sessions on television and radio on the skin bleach and the harmful effects. At the postnatal visits, or when they come to see us, especially when we see signs, we educate the mothers. And also some of the talks during the OPD, when the parents or mothers are waiting for the children to be seen, we also do educate us, like general education on skin bleaching and why they shouldn't bleach the children. For the antenatal bit, the obstetrician gynecologist will be the best to speak to this, although I suspect that they also touch on it during the antenatal care.
Let me talk to Dr. Mr. Emmanuel Nkrumah, head of cosmetics at the FDA. You are a dermatologist, so you also understand this issue deeply. I know that in 2017, we banned some of these products. In fact, almost all these bleaching agents, we banned them. But why do we still have them in our system? Why do mothers, people still have access to these banned products?
Okay. Hello. Thank you very much. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Nkrumah, we can hear you.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. For clarity, I'm not a dermatologist. I'm a regulatory officer with the FDA.
Oh, thank you. Thank
but
you for that.
I'm priority. Part of the dermatology. I'm a member of the Dermatology Association of Ghana.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Now, thank you for the opportunity. The FDA, through its activity and continuous education, monitoring, trying to embed information in 2015, it was also part of the reason why we needed to place emphasis on the fact that hydroquinone is not a cosmetic product and is not permitted to be used as such. So we placed the emphasis on that, did a lot of public education, and it was through the public education that we got the information from people in the rural areas and even the urban areas that people have taken up the habit of bleaching their children. And so the question was, why are you bleaching? Some people say that it's a cream we use. We know it's for that purpose. And we also use it for natural.
Mr. Nkrumah, there's a bit of noise in your background. I don't know whether you're on the road or not. If you can get into...
Yes, I'm on the road. Let me park.
Okay. Okay, so we are talking about bleached babies, the cost of beauty here on the Super Morning Show. We have on the phone Dr. Hilda Mantibia Boy, President of the Pediatric Society, Dr. Titus Bayo, he's a Member of Parliament Health Committee, and Mr. Emmanuel Nkrumah, Head of Cosmetics at the FDA. We want to understand the products that have been banned and why they are still in the market and they are being used. Mr. Nkrumah, can you hear me? Please go ahead.
Yes, I can hear you. Is it clear now?
Perfect now.
Okay, thank you very much. So, the emphasis, we keep doing this publication, trying to inform Ghanaians on the harmful effects of these products. Even for adults, there are implications, there are health conditions, and long-term effects. And exposure to even the sun has a very harmful effect on the skin, let alone babies. You see, babies are such that they have a very delicate skin. And even products, you see, there are various product categories purposely made for babies. Skincare products, creams, lotions, hair cleansing, body cleansing, and all that. Even some babies are so sensitive that products that have fragrance, they react. Let alone a harmful ingredient like hydroquinone. And some of these products, the hydroquinone is not even 2%. It's more. 3%. Or even more. And the unfortunate thing is, people are selling these products into the country, not using the approved system, just because of social trending and also issues about style.
Ms. Nkrumah, we have a very bad line to you. What we are going to do is that we'll go for a break. When we come back, we'll bring the three of you back on the line to talk about this. So far, you are telling us that even though these products are banned, people still smuggle them into the country. How do we work together to stop this smuggling? How do we close all the routes that people smuggle these products, people used to smuggle these products? And then Dr. Titus Bayo, we want to also talk to you about your experience and how now, as a member of Parliament Health Committee, we can use the power of the state in a much more effective way to stop this problem from spreading further. Yes, we heard you in the documentary talking about all the challenges and the reasons why some mothers do this. Please shed some more lights on this for us.
In fact, let me share a personal story before I even share that of my client that I've encountered. My four-year-old son, we were driving from church, he saw a billboard and his countenance fell. And he became sad, and this was his own school billboard, and the rest of us were excited. Then she confided in her mom that he usually sits in front. And on the day they were coming to take that picture for the billboard, he was relocated to the back. And the fairer kids in the class brought to the front and a picture taken to be used for the billboard. This got to him so badly that we had to change the school. And this is how the society perceives light-colored skin people.
They moved your son from the front row to the back. Exactly. Take a photo of fair-colored children to advertise the school.
So this is not something that affects people who are not literate or educated. it got so bad. I mean, we had, myself and my wife had to work on this boy's mindset, because he, if the mother can get him a cream, so that he will also be fair. So you see the society we've created. I had a patient who was married to a Caucasian, or in a partnership with a Caucasian, delivered the baby. Baby is very dark. Then the mother asked me whether the baby will grow, will get fairer as the baby grows. And I said I couldn't guarantee that. The next time I saw her, she had started bleaching the baby. I had to counsel her, refer her to a psychologist. So these are some of the factors driving this. And following on the documentary, I'm not sure it's exactly ignorance, because it looks like a lot of people know that there are some side effects. But we have to look at the societal driving. Of course, if you are the only dark person among fair people, you stand out. So in the Caucasian populations, people are trying to get darker. And in our populations, the fair people stand out, giving more opportunities, as alluded to by Dr. Mantibia, and therefore they will want more people want to get fair.
Mm.
But people must be mindful of the medical consequences.
Now, Dr. Bayo, so you just said that most of these mothers are aware that it's bad, and that they know the impact and the effect of this, but they still go ahead to do that. Is that not criminal? Is that not child cruelty, or whatever the lawyers would call it? If you know that you're applying a harmful chemical on your child and it's going to affect the well-being of the child, but you go ahead to apply that, can we not arrest these mothers and deal with them as per the law? Or there's no law that protects children in this case?
I think there are a lot of laws. The question is who enforces and how do you even enforce? Because children who are less than 18 and not capable of making decisions on their own, when it comes to critical health decisions, the state owns them and must protect them. So if you take a decision that is harmful to your child, the state can go contrary to that and authorize other people to ask local parents and provide a safety net for that child. So, but it's a much broader problem, you know, than going to arrest one or two parents. The drive in the society must be reduced. We must educate people, and we must also let them know the full spectrum. Some of them know that when their children grow, or they may have problems with their skin, they are fairly aware that people who have bleached, when they get injuries, they struggle to heal. But whether they know that in children, this can lead to growth restriction, the child may never obtain their full height potential. This child is at risk of developing Cushing syndrome, where the child has a rounded face, like a moon face, as we call it, that it can have problems on their brain development, that they stand the risk of developing hypertension, even in children, and all the associated problems. Whether they know all of this, I'm not sure. So documentaries like this and films like this to educate the people becomes useful. Dr. But Bayo, at some point, some enforcement must come in.
Yes, I'll come back to you for that enforcement and a bit more on the effects on our healthcare delivery. Now, the new cases of cancer that we are recording in our facilities and all that. But we've also been joined by Kwame Sapon Esiedu. He's a DND fellow on public health. And Kwame creaming in my WhatsApp, and I want to get his thoughts on the child cruelty bit, the criminal aspects of this practice, and how we can deal with it. And I'm happy that Dr. Bayo, you are here, because you're also in Parliament. So you mentioned enforcement. We'll take Kwame's thoughts. And when we come back to you for the medical issues, you can also tell us how we can use the law better in dealing with this. Kwame, good morning. Welcome to the Super Morning Show.
Good morning, Kojo. How are you?
Kwame, I'm well. You're alive. Please, let's go.
Things like this break my heart. You see, they break my heart because chlorine, and with this, I'm talking as a pharmaceutical chemist, because that's another area of our specialty. Chlorine is carcinogenic. If you listen to the head from FDA, he was clear about it. Chlorine is carcinogenic. That means that it can predispose you to cancer. But more importantly, if you put someone in a non-ventilated room and you heat up chlorine, parazone, it yields chlorine. Not just the chlorine itself, but what we call the chlorine radical, because you've heated it and it would react with oxygen. If you inhale that, you can immediately develop acute chemical reactions to your body. It can actually give you mild burns and take off the upper layer of your skin, especially in a child who is that young. And that's dangerous, because once you take off the top layer of the skin, the absorption through what we call the dermis of the skin is high. So immediately you are exposing that child to skin cancer without knowing. Let's park that. Then you are exposing the child's breathing membranes, what we call the respiratory mucosa. You are exposing it to irritants. So you are predisposing that child to early onset of asthma, and if they are lucky to grow long enough, to COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease.
So this is not just to do with the skin, but other diseases as well, like asthma.
Yes, yes, yes. So you are talking about, in very serious cases, you can actually get the child to choke because the chlorine can paralyze the reflex at the back of their throat that helps them to get any fluid that would go into their throat out. I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm asking myself, how do we even get here? And I don't want to go further, because with things like this, they are immediate, intermediate, and delayed onset stuff. Because you can get bronchospasms, you can get hypoxia, very, very dangerous things. And I'm quite sure it may have happened. It's just that when the mother brings the child to the emergency or something like that, they wouldn't be honest to tell the doctors or the health professionals there what actually led to the emergency they are reporting. So it will come in and they'll say akolanin asthma attack or something like that, without actually saying what actually led to it, because you are leaving that kid in a non-ventilated room for 30 minutes, and that's key. The concentration of chlorine in parazole, if you heat it, gives you an air concentration level of more than 3 parts per million. That's dangerous. Look, that is why I started, the minute I started looking at this, I started screaming in your inbox, because I was like, somebody somewhere must be arrested. Somebody somewhere must be prosecuted. This is child cruelty.
So we need to make an example of mothers doing this to deter others from doing sin?
But you see, then let's pack the parazole. Now let's go to the isotretinoin. In that skin preparation you talked about. In the UK, if a female is prescribed isotretinoin because they have a condition with the skin, even then, you as a pharmacist need to tell that person not to conceive, because it has what we call teratogenic effects. That when you talk about teratogenicity, it simply means that if the child and their mother was to get pregnant, the fetus might not develop properly. And Prof. Bayo has given examples of some of the things that could happen. So I would not, elaborate the point. So even when it's medically prescribed, you need to put that safeguarding in place to ensure that a child doesn't unnecessarily come to harm because the mother has to be treated necessarily for a medical condition. If even as a professional, you didn't give that information to the mother, and the mother got pregnant, and there was what we call congenital malformation, and it was found that you didn't give that information out, you could be held professionally liable. That's professional misconduct.
Mm.
So, you see, so I'm looking at the gravity of what we are doing to ourselves, and I'm asking myself, Kwete has done a very, very good piece of work, but what is going to happen after this piece of work has been done? What's going to happen? Because we already have a health system that is inundated with a doubling of our disease burden. We have chronic diseases overlapping, infectious diseases. And we are not even finding how to get through that properly. Why would we just go and buy cancer on the cheap and add it to our problems?
So we should...
We
should arrest those selling the cancer on the streets. We should arrest and prosecute the mothers applying the cancer in their homes as well. And maybe the men who are also not paying attention at home and allowing the women to do as they please.
Well, there is, a stream of negligence here. If you listen to the FDA, creams containing hydroquinones are banned in Ghana anyway. Isotretinoin is a prescription-only medicine, so it shouldn't be sold in a cosmetic shop. So a cream that contains a banned substance and a prescription-only substance is a breach of the food and drugs laws. It's a complete breach of their laws. So the person importing is a criminal. The person selling is a criminal. The person using is a criminal. The parent who is also looking on is criminally culpable. Because you allow harm to come to a kid.
Kwame, thank you. Thank you for bringing this angle to the conversation. I know you don't have a lot of time this morning, so I'll let you go. But let me go back to Dr. Titus Bayo and Mr. Nkrumah. So, Doc, you were talking about the medical issues and how we are struggling to deal with them. Please continue, sir.
All right. So I think that for an adult, if it causes harm to themselves, how we handle this should be different. For the children, it's really bad because these are very innocent children that don't know what their preference will be in terms of skin color when they grow. And so for the mother listening to us, who is desirous of getting a fair child, or fair colored child, for the father listening to us, who has a certain custom-made baby in mind and has given birth to one that does not look like that, please know that whatever you are doing must be balanced with the following complications that you are exposing your child to. That child may not grow optimally. That child may have brain development challenge. That child may have water retention in their body. That child may have muscle wasting and therefore grow very lean, that child may develop hypertension. And hypertension, we think, is only in adults. You can have it in children. And imagine if you're hypertensive at that early age. How long do you live with it? With problems like kidney failure and the rest. So we must be mindful that, and the cancers, and the others that Kwame has just mentioned. So we must know the full-scale effect of it. Now, if you ask of solutions, I think just like we are struggling with the opioids, in Ghana, we have beautiful laws, but implementation becomes a challenge. And some of the laws themselves actually make their implementation challenging. So, for instance, if someone sets up a clinic that is supposed to be a beauty clinic, but not a medical facility, the person doesn't fall under HIPAA for regulation. So who regulates that clinic? And I think in the documentary, we heard Dr. Insiansari mention that he doubts that these are licensed professionals. That he doubts, and I also agree with him, because the licensed professionals are working under license, and their license can be seized if anyone should make that report. So if someone purports to be a doctor, a nurse, a registered practitioner, and is helping you with this, we should be able to get a person report and the person is punished. But those who fall in between the lines, where the person is neither a herbal clinic to be regulated by the alternative medicine and traditional medical practice councils, and it's not neither an orthodox clinic. The person starts like a cosmetic shop and is selling all of this. How do we deal with that? Then it's the FDA that can come in. Do they have enough capacity to move around and arrest these people? Are Ghanaians willing to report? If you are you live in a compound house and your neighbor is bleaching a baby and you've seen this, to be able to report to the media, are you willing to report to the police? Are you willing to report to the FDA that someone is doing this harm with an unlicensed product? These are all questions we need to ask. But we must not forget as a nation that we are building up a certain...
I always had a private doctor. I didn't think I needed VA care. Then I learned VA is ranked above private care systems nearby and costs less. I'm getting the best care of my life with providers trained to treat veterans. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Disease burden, which may not manifest now, but in about 10 years, 15 years, you have kids whose brain development has not been optimal. Therefore, they are not able to pass exams and excel, and you have to rehabilitate and manage them. We have kids with chronic conditions, diabetes, hypertension in early adulthood. And how do we manage them? We have young people who have abused opioids, become dependent, and can no longer work. They are not productive, but are still burdened on the society as adults. How we manage this? So if the proportion of the population in this class becomes more, and they are not adding anything productively, but are dependent on the few who work, to keep them alive. Are we prepared for that? Somebody must crack their whip now.
Dr. Bayo, let me ask you this. Because we're talking about solutions, the mental health experts tell us that one in every four Ghanaians has some kind of mental disorder. Is part of this problem not mental? Even the societal pressure that you describe, is some of it not of mental health origins? This idea that you look at a child with dark skin and you see something wrong with that child, even when it's your own child, and you see something so wrong that you are pushed to basically slather your child's skin in cancer causing chemicals to correct some perceived wrong. Is it not a mental disorder? Should the solution also not come from the mental health side of things?
I agree with you, Koju, perfectly, that there is some bit of mental issues here. And you heard in my earlier submission that the mother who was worried and had started bleaching a unit has referred her to the clinical psychologist. So while these chemicals themselves can lead to mental issues can predispose someone to the tendency to use these things. And in rehabilitating and managing them, the clinical psychologist, the mental health practitioners play a critical role. But you see, I don't know whether to use the term, whether it's an appropriate term, but we may be having a community diagnosis of mental problems where the value system of the entire community appears to be shifting. And therefore, you need to rehabilitate the entire society. Because when a large proportion of the society believes that just being fair makes you beautiful, just being fair should give you advantages. When teachers, proprietors of schools are looking for fair people to sit in front of their class to take pictures so that they can be on a billboard to attract more students, to show that what they have cast in their school, or white people coming to the school, what does that mean? So that means that there is a wider societal problem and maybe a communal diagnosis and communal therapy if needed as well.
Okay, now let me talk to Mr. Emmanuel Nkrumah briefly before we wrap up this conversation for the morning. Mr. Nkrumah, the FDA has been working on this for years. Obviously, the work you're doing is getting some results, but there's still a lot more to be done. How can we help the FDA to rid our country of these products and to save us from this problem?
Okay, thank you very much. And my brother, any time we talk about this topic, especially in relation to children, it gives me goosebumps, credentials. It is a very emotional topic to talk about. You see, the skin of children are thinner, more fragile, and less mature than adults. And this makes it more susceptible to irritation and environmental factors. You see, even the pigmentation is something that is still being developing. Now, it's scientifically proven that dark skin individuals in our tropic and in our part of the world is an advantage because of the effect of the sun. There's a pigment in the skin called melanin, and melanin prevents UV light from getting direct into the inner layers of the skin to give it that protection. And this protection, if it's removed, cancer is one of them, melanoma. So this melanin gives a protective layer. And my brother, the more you use these skin lightening products, especially hydroquinone, it reduces the production of melanin. So the more darker you are, the more melanin you have. The less melanin you have, the lighter you become. So this layer that God has created for us, where we are, why do you want to take it off? How many even sunscreens are very important and good to use? But my brother, between me and you, how many people use sunscreen in our part of this world? Even though it's important, it has an advantage, right? And people even go to the extent of mixing products with products like tretinoin and steroids. Our medics were talking of issues, health issues. There are many. Kidney disease, liver disease, cancers and the like. Right. And this effect is so dangerous that it affects not just the health and safety of the Ghanaian, and for that matter, our wonderful children who are the future of this country. But it also has socio-economic impact in nation building, because a lot of money will have to be pushed through the health sector to address this issue.
It's a big problem.
Medication that we don't need.
It's a big problem. So I'm looking at the top 20 diseases that are reported to our hospitals, and it looks like now these challenges have taken over the regular ones we knew. So these non-communicable diseases have taken over the infectious diseases, like the other panelists said. And as we all know, FDA over the years has banned a lot of these chemicals. In fact, almost all the chemicals have been banned, but we find them in our system. So how can the populace help FDA to rid the system of these formulations that we see every day?
Okay, thank you. It's a responsibility for every Ghanaian to help us to do this. The media is part. The regulators are doing their part. We do it together. Public education is key. We inform people. But ignorance is no excuse. Right. We need to continuously do this. The FDA have all the apparatus in place. We have communication channels. We have social media handles. You just name them. We have two freelancers. The FDA offices are open in all the regions across the country. There are contact persons. Me, I'm here. My number is open out there. Every officer who's in charge in protecting the health and safety of the Ghanaian, especially children.
So when we find these products, we should call you and let you know where we found them so that you clamp down on those.
Exactly,
those
we'll do
them.
That.
But can you share names of some of the products? You've mentioned the ingredients in most of these products, but we don't know the names. Can the FDA put together a list, possibly, and share with us so that we use that for public education purposes?
It's something that has been done in the past. We can revisit it and always put it out there. The issue is, the one that we put out there, the manufacturers were engaged. They were trained. It's been done. Now, there are others which keep trickling in. And we keep informing the general public, if you see any of these products on the market, true or not, suspicious or not, inform the FDA. We will verify and update you with the information. Personally, in the media, or through any medium available to ensure that the right information gets to the Ghanaian. Tomorrow it can be my nephew, my niece, right? And this is so important that if we don't do it at this time, it will get out of hand.
Yeah, we need to do this job at this time. Mr. Emmanuel Nkrumah, Head of Cosmetics at the FDA, Dr. Titus Bayo, Member of Parliament's Health Committee. We're also joined by Dr. Hilda Mantibia Boy, and Kwame Sapone Siedu also joined us. Mr. Nkrumah, especially, we'll be coming to you. We want to understand the products that have been banned, what to look out for, so that together we can work to rid the system of these products to prevent this problem from happening. Thank you all so much for joining us this morning on the phone to discuss this issue.